At the age of 36, I've been officially diagnosed with a binge eating disorder, and on the 17th of January 2020, I've started therapy. I've committed to video log my journey towards recovery for one big reason. In the last 18 months, I've undergone a massive amount of self-development training that opened me up to the actions I'm taking today for my mental health. But there's one big aspect of self-development that struck me joyfully: the amount we learn through others, through sharing the inner life we wouldn't dare to share in our wildest dreams. So if my story can make sense and a difference to anyone listening to it, then it's worth to be out there. After all, as Martin Luther King said, life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others? These words were posted on Facebook a week ago from my dear friend Julia. Without a further introduction, let's jump straight into this amazing conversation. Furthermore, we have already now agreed to accompany Julia on her recovery during therapy. Therefore, just a little side note, you will hear more from Julia in the near future. We wish you, as always, much fun and many insights with your Ben Estermeyer.
Your Ben Estermeyer mit Clara, Lennart und Christian.
A very warm welcome to a new episode of Your Ben Estermeyer. Today, as always, not as always actually, because we are today very international. We have London, Münster and Hanover, so there is apparently London in between, which is not normal for us. But a very warm welcome, dear Julia.
Hi.
Hello everyone. Hi, good evening.
And as well, Callisto, Clara and
Christian.
Hello.
Callisto? Okay, very good. Very good. Our guest today is the dear Julia, known as well as a business psychologist in her professional life, living in London. But I don't want to talk too much about you since you are here as well. So please, maybe you can just introduce yourself a little bit about you yourself, that our listeners get a little bit of an idea.
Yeah, sure. As a background, I'm a psychologist. Everything started with, being interested in what people do, the way they, the quality of their experience at work, which I realized I've always been so interested. I started working when I was very young. I was 17 in those restaurants. I've always been a yes sayer. And so I joined workplaces since I was very, very young. And that's how, you know, I invested my time. I could see environments, different people, how environments were created by people. So that's where my academic background was guided. So I have a background in business psychology, in occupational psychology, and organizational psychology. Always fascinated. How do we make these lots of parts all together work? And they generate more than their sum. We already know that. So, and I've been specializing in safety and how we manage safety, because work, when people go to work, they may die because of what they do. So is it luck? Is it chance? Is it just lack of care? No, it's not. There are so many moving parts in very complex environments that we have to be aware of. And you being in that environment doesn't make you know those things automatically. So you're the one to learn by trial and error, especially in a high-risk industry. So that's where psychology of safety, you know, comes in and supports. So, yes, been loving what I do. It's a huge interest of mine.
I want to give a little bit of a side note. I met Julia in London on a self-development course, and you have really a big place in my heart and mind. Once we left the course at, I don't know, 10:30 in on a Wednesday or Thursday, and I still recall the moment where you told me what you were going to do on the weekend, what you're going to attend, what courses you attend. I've never met a person who is so invested in further in gaining further knowledge on whatever
part. I think it was a real estate course you were taking on the weekend. You had another self-development course on, I don't know, the next week, actually all day, all night. And it was just, for me, absolutely mind-blowing, because I thought that I'm doing a lot. And like, then you came and told me what you were doing, and I was like, okay, she's going really, really, really big.
Well, interesting you say that, because I was not like that before. And I can say, while I've invested a lot of time in my academia, and I've always been, again, as a yes-sayer, when there is an opportunity in front of me, either to learn something or to do something new, I will say yes to you. You know, I may change my mind later, but I will always say yes to you, because I don't want to lose that opportunity. I know I am intrinsically curious, what's in there? So I want to know that, I want to learn. But I was not that committed to my development before. So 3 years ago, well, I would say my another birth date for me is the 26th of December 2016. I do remember that Christmas, I was here in London. I couldn't get a flying ticket for Italy to see my family. And I was destined to be here on my own. And I said, I'm not going to be here at Christmas on my own, whatever happens. So I started activating my network, because can you invite me for Christmas, please? Just working on that. And I had one friend saying yes, because they were just doing nothing big special, like, this is, yeah, Julia, come and we're going to have a dinner. And that's that day I heard a book from, you know, of a book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. My friend was sharing with me, she hadn't read the book. She was sharing the review of the book that she heard of. And that book, that sharing experience, opened my eyes to something. The day after, so the 26th of December 2016, I bought that book, which I drank like in a week probably. And my life has turned, you know, upside down, because that book not only talks about finances and financial literature that we are not, you know, things that we don't learn in school, but it talks about our self-development. It talks about who to become to be in control of our life. Rather, you know, who do we need to be, and how do we need to be? How do we look like when we are designing our life rather than happening to us? So that book has started that Julia that you've met, and I probably wouldn't have met you if I cannot say that, but
if I may ask,
amazing.
Basically, the lessons or the information you got from this book, you could basically transfer them from finance. I mean, I know the book, and it's of course also about self-development, but it seems that you kind of, you know, pushed it further for yourself, right?
Yes. And I see that what that book did for me, it used the finances side of our life, which is a big side, right? You know, you will probably agree on that. Finances, you know, it's a measure of success. It's a measure, you know, it's a way of living. People get worried, people get anxiety because of lack of money and scarcity, right? So he uses, for me, what happened in that book, that the financial side of life was used for me to take a stock on where I was life-wise. Because my finances is one aspect, one KPI, key performance indicator of my life. And you know what? I'm not 100% satisfied. And I had a job, I had a full-time job, I had a car, I had all these things that external people would judge as success. And I knew by reading that book that I am not. Far from it. That's not success. So that's it. Money is one aspect of it.
What is it then in the end? Like when you said that you weren't successful, what was it for you?
The success is how I got there. How I got there is not sustainable. So what I realized from that book, and then all the books and the self-development I've done, is that what I have done and the choices I've made to get there are not sustainable choices, are not choices that give me habits to bring with me for the rest of my life and that will work for me to be successful. Okay. I'll give you an example. Success for some people. So again, I'm Italian, I'm from South Italy, and I moved here to London. I got a bursary to study for masters abroad, right? So that is success for some people. But that's for me is just the tip of a huge iceberg of work and hours of study. Okay. So came here, studied my master's degree, found a job within the rat race in the end. So commute 1.5 hours, you know, be in an office for 8 hours, commute 1.5 hours back on a good day, because on a bad day it could have been 2.5 hours because of traffic. And there you go, day in the loop, it's too late, I can't go anywhere, my energy is down, and I'll just go to bed because tomorrow I have to wake up very early. So me having nice clothes or nice jewelry, or, you know, being able to dine out, or, you know, going on a trip by, you know, or, you know, having a car, this is for what, you know, the common people, this is success. And for me, it's not, because I don't have fundamental freedom to choose that. I depend on something else. I don't create, but I rely on something else outside of me to give that to me. And that's a very, very dangerous thing to do. Very, very dangerous thing to do. So I realized in that book that I'm not creating my life. I'm not setting my life the way I think should work or the way it works for me.
And what did you then, change? What measures did you take in order to become the captain of your life, so to say?
So the self-development side, I realized there were certain habits that I had developed that were not working anymore. I could see them. Someone in those books and I was reading, someone was talking to me. And I could see that what I do is not, it won't work. Okay, so, studying biographies or, you know, reading successful people, I realized that my habits are very different from theirs. And so, for example, I didn't know. I have isolated myself. Like, as a person, I used to think of myself to be an introvert. And while I may still be an introvert, I realized that the problem was isolating myself, not being an introvert. Being an introvert is no problem whatsoever, because we have just different ways of dealing with things. But I was isolated. I used to isolate myself. I used to not building connections with people. So, and I changed that with, well, I'm still changing, if you want, because it's not something that, you know, to achieve overnight, but it's a constant awareness, a constant two voices in my head, you know, the past voice wanting to do something and probably jumping into something the old way. And now my new voice saying, hey, Julia, you're doing that again. Don't do that. You know, it doesn't work. So what else we can do? And believe you me, so simple. That's why I mentioned the slight edge the other day. Because it's so mundane, it's so simple, it doesn't take any effort, but it is changing every split that presents itself to me with every decision. Should I go out today or not? Yes, no. Should I wake up now? I'm tired. Yes, no. Should I read my 10 pages today? Yes, no. Should I eat this food now that I'm so craving? Yes, no. It's so micro decisions in a day. It's just a wow. It's mind blowing. I've become conscious of that. I've become conscious of what happens in all my decisions.
Well, it's actually quite interesting. I think we do about minimum of 4,000 decisions or choices every day. And like this micro, you know, things you were talking about, even, you know, when you drive the car, I mean, if you don't have an automatic car, you need to decide when to change the gear, right? So, the thing is, I don't know if you ever, you know, you talked about decisions and I was just wondering, just, you know, as an impulse, because I learned quite some years ago, you know, I changed the word decisions or exchanged this word decisions with the word choices, because I think, you know, to decide something feels a bit kind of, you know, final. And if you choose something, I mean, you can choose something different 5 seconds later, right? Theoretically.
I love that. Christian, I love that. Thank you. That's amazing. That's amazing. And that also, well said, because, and if you choose something and it doesn't work, you know, there's nothing irreversible. There's nothing permanent. There's nothing. So I can go back. You know, we are always writing in pencil. There's always an eraser. You can get the eraser and delete it. Yeah, let's rewrite it again. So I love that. I love that way. It's so sweet, simple, effective. Yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. So then basically, you know, to follow your story, this is very, very fascinating what you're talking about. So basically then you kind of, or you're still in the process, as we all are, you know, to change habits, to do things. So could you maybe tell us a bit, you know, what exactly did you actually do concretely, you know?
So one big thing that I'm going through is, so I'm 36 and I have been officially diagnosed with an eating disorder. And in this, something happened last June. I was putting together some information about mental health. And I came across this charity called BEAT. And there was something, you know, capturing my attention, because I've always had a very up and down relationship with food, let's put it that way. And by reading a question that they had, I realized that I really need help, because if those questions are in this charity homepage, asking, you know, in offering support to people potentially affected by eating disorder, and I've replied yes to all those questions but one, what are the chances that there is something going on here? So what I've changed there, I have, before, you know, my I call it 26th of December 2016, that's what I've lived with all throughout my life. I didn't know there was an operating system that was running me when it came to food. And what I've changed there is a paradigm I have, that I will show the world how strong I am, and I will show the world how good I am and how clever I am. That was my way of surviving. Okay, that's what I realized, and you know, in the self-development programs me and Leonard, we followed, that's where I learned that. That was my way to survive. And this time I said, no, I'm not clever. I don't know how to fix this. I have no idea. That clearly hasn't worked for 36 years, right? So you can search for help now. There is someone else who knows better than you. And you have to shut up and be coachable. Go there. So that for me was a huge giving away power, if you know what I mean. And it was a huge vulnerability moment. But, you know, that was more important than looking clever. I want to be clever than looking clever. I want to be strong rather than looking strong. And I know this is a way of achieving it, and, you know, to reach that grounding that I cannot achieve with that noise in my head. So I have, and one big thing of specifically for the eating disorder, the secrecy aspect of it. So hence my isolation all these years, the secrecy is what keeps it alive. It exists because it's consumed in secrecy, because it's full. There's a lot of shame. There's a lot of stuff going on. So you don't show that to people.
But I mean, this is so powerful. What you just said now, sorry to interrupt it, but this is so important and so powerful. The secrecy. So you know, I think at the moment it's out. It doesn't really control you anymore because you know if people know, well, they will deal with it. You know, and I think the immense power people then use for all sorts of things in order that people don't know. I mean, if one would use this power in order to get better, for example, this would make lots of sense. And I find it so important to get out into the light, you know?
Imagine you are, you know, kidnapped by someone and you are in a place where no one knows you are. You will be there for years. And
absolutely.
What happens? Yeah, what happens when people knock on your door? What happens when third party knock on that door of that kidnapper? They will come and rescue you. They will, you know, come and check, hey, how are you doing? Okay. Are you okay? So this is what happened. And by having that change, you know, I have told everyone with no shame. Well, there is a part of, you know, oh, you know, are you going to think of me? I'm nuts or something like that. But you know what? It lasts 1 second. It really lasts 1 second because then there is the dimension of, no, share that because you want people to check on you. And after that, you may have people in front of you that are in this exactly same position. People that they don't know they are kidnapped by themselves. They may, you know, a benefit of this. They may have a light bulb going on.
Mm-hmm. Julia, I have a question. What happened to your voice inside your head when you decided to get help?
The voice, what I was so tired at that point that the kidnapper voice was not that strong anyways. I was so tired that nothing was working. Because one aspect of specifically my eating disorder is that I gain weight more and more and more. So all throughout, I've done kind of a historical data thing. I have gone up in weight, lost weight, then gone up again, always more. I would gain more and more weight and less and lose less weight, right? So I was going up and up and up. So, you know, and you see those pro TV programs in TV, people being in bed because they cannot move anymore. That didn't happen overnight. That happened over the years. And they have the same thinking pattern I used to have. And so when it came, so the moment of, you know, reaching out for help came, the voice of the kidnapper, inverted comma, was not that strong anymore because I have all the evidences all around me saying, you are going towards where you don't want to be. Can you see that? So what's the pride about? What's the, you know, looking strong and good about? There's nothing to look good about. You're also big, so don't look really good, right? So if you know, there was so much evidence around it. And therefore, I said, okay, what's the next one thing I can do? And then I went to the doctor. The doctor referred me. I was referred to three different services until the last service said, yeah, that's where you have to be with us.
That's what... Sorry. No, I was just... I was just thinking about something Christian said in his podcast. Christian is doing a morning minutes, kind of 5 minutes podcast every day when he wakes up. And he was basically in English, yeah, listen to it. It's called My Morning Minutes. And he was basically having some thoughts on how to use energy. And what you've described, basically, once you have overcome the kidnapper and use your energy towards the right direction and not anymore using the energy for hiding yourself, so basically for showing that you are strong versus just accepting who you are and being strong. And I think this is a massive energy shift because as long as you are, you invest energy in hiding your authentic self, you just, I mean, we have always just 1 second or one piece of energy, however you want to call it. And the moment you shift this energy towards being authentic and sharing what you have, for instance, what you are doing, everything changes to a certain extent.
Absolutely. That's my experience. And that's what happened. And since then, I've been able to do much more like out there. So I have started believing in my ideas because, you know, not talking myself out of them, because now I don't feel there's a, you know, I'll give you an example. So do you know how many things I've missed in my life because of a what if negative scenario I was in? I'll tell you, I have, and I'll share this very, very personal thing because that's how deep a food thing affects my life. It's not a food. It's not go to the gym, have some diet. No, it's here. I have lost the opportunity to be with wonderful men, partners, at the idea of them seeing me naked when we had to make love. Can you imagine? Can you imagine how, you know, I have let go potential beautiful relationships because of this one thing? Mm-hmm. Right? So now you see the energy. The energy was all here. The energy was all here in hiding and protecting, I don't know what. I really don't know what. While the energy I would have taken from a wonderful guy, you know, I couldn't even think what that great energy could have been. Can you imagine that? So I absolutely agree. I am experiencing that on my skin right now. So I'm not doubting what happened, you know, the shift in the energy. I will have an idea. I'll doubt it a little bit and say, no, you cannot control that. You know, just put it out there, just do it and forget about it. If it goes well, good. If it doesn't, that's it.
Just a little comment on this note as well, just for the listener to get an idea how great Julia is and how brave she is. She was once basically trying to date her boss, and was so amazing for me because you were, I don't know, like tell the story a bit, but it was so funny when you basically, like, I don't know, approach your boss after thinking of if he's the right one or blah, blah, blah. Just, it's an amazing story.
Thank you for sharing that, because that's one of the acts of courage. That was a purely, you know, you see someone, you like them, you fancy them, you pick up the phone and you're going to have a conversation. What was going on in here to have a phone call to say, can I see you? Can I, you know, meet you for a drink? And in that drink, I shared everything, you know, to him. And you know what? For the first time, I was super happy to share. The only thing I wanted there is him to know how brilliant he is. You know, rather than being worried about me, if this goes well, which didn't, because this guy didn't, I didn't hear from him. But while I was really there, I was not worrying about me. I was just absolutely delighted to share with him how great he is. Okay, so that was a learning experience, beautiful learning experience. And that happened six months before I sought for help, for professional help, before I knew I have an eating disorder there. So now I'm just connecting the dots. I'm just understanding what happened.
What I would be interested, you know, to get your point of view, because you are trained, you know, professional in your area. I did a lot of this kind of things in my life, but I never, you know, studied psychology or anything like this. I rather approached it from a different side. Yeah. So I would be really interested what you say. You know, I mean, my awareness a bit is, you know, when we classify things, when we say, for example, okay, I have a eating disorder, okay? I mean, certainly it doesn't make sense to say, no, I don't have a problem and it's not existing, yeah? And at the same time, if we give it a name, if we give it a kind of shelf, yeah, I always found that this can be quite destructive, and it can also, you know, kind of fix things on a certain spot. And I was wondering, you know, if we just go with the awareness that there's something which is maybe a lack of something, or, you know, there's something, I mean, we're all doing things, and I don't think there is a single human being on this entire planet who doesn't have any kind of disorder, you know? I mean, I have one, I mean, everybody has some little thing or a bigger thing where, you know, we are not balanced, I think, you know? And so how I look on it is like, there is something and I need to search, you know, where it's coming from and why is this happening, yeah? So, I mean, what is your take on that? Do you think it's totally crazy when I say that actually maybe there is no such thing actually as an eating disorder as such, you know what I mean? Or would you say it's good that we have this kind of classifications?
Well, I want a little disclaimer here. I'm not a clinical psychologist, so I can't share from a clinical psychology background. However, based on my personal experience, I can share what my personal experience on that is and what my take is. The label. What helped me giving it a label? When you give a name to something, you know what you're dealing with. So it's a little bit of journaling. Okay, so we may have lots of thoughts, things, you know, go on in my in our head, but when you put them on a piece of paper, there is a sudden transformation in your clarity. When you have, you know, goals set and you have them in a vision board, there is a different experience of them. When you are grateful for something, but you journal your three things a day. You're in your first thing in the morning, you just write down in your journal your three things you're grateful for today. Your energy shifts like that. You know what you're dealing with. You know, the other day I was grateful of I have a starry robe I use at home. And I've had it since 2009. I didn't realize it keeps me warm since 2009 and it's still beautiful. I was so grateful for that little simple thing. My energy shifted like that. So in the eating, with the eating disorder specifically, or a disorder, my personal experience, but again, I have to say that I sort of was prepared for that. I've done so much work for me to become in accepting of it. When a label was given to it, I felt sort of relieved. I know what I'm dealing with. I know what's the name of this beast, because it's a beast that has shaped everything in my life without me knowing, and has prevented me to enjoy life without me knowing, right? So giving it a name, giving it a label was for me so relieving. And I absolutely agree, we all have some sort of, you know, forms of things. But one thing is resiliency, and we know how to cope. You know, there's not going to be one day you're not going to be overeating. But why are you overeating? Or you're not going to have an anxiety attack. It doesn't have to be a label. But, you know, one thing is coping, and that is not affecting your life. It's there for some time, and then you know what to do with it. And one thing is your life is shaped by this. And your everyday decisions for months and years and childhood, you know, everything is shaped by the same thing. That's a little bit more than, you know, a temporary condition. You know, when the seeking for help has allowed me to, because I have this conversation now with a therapist. Do you know what's the very first memory I knew, so that I know now, I've been affected by this since I was probably 8. Right? There was a memory. I was referred to a specialist because I was one of three kids, the biggest three kids in the entire school, we had those annual medical checks, right? So we had a doctor coming in, and me and other two kids, we were the only three kids in the whole school being referred to a specialist because we were too big, right? So that was a good thing. It's health. Right? It's not good to be overweight. But then I do remember having my thought there was, oh, right, I am the slimmest across the three. So no one, so you see, I was talking about body shape. No one explained it to me. Like, I was not thinking about health. I was not thinking about anything. I was thinking about body shape. And all the decisions, all everything has been about my image of myself, the image I think others have of myself, hence didn't want to be seen naked, right? And all aspects related, body related rather than health related. So that's a disorder, because it's not true. And I am shaping my decisions or my choices based on what doesn't exist.
How present, Julia, do you think are eating disorders in society?
Say, what's the question again?
The question is, what do you think, how present are eating disorders in society in general? When does it start? Because when I think back to my time in London, I think I'm pretty sure that I have struggled as well with eating, I think in a different way, but I couldn't stop eating for days. And it was for me really, as well, I think it was could have been as well a psychological diagnosis to some extent. And I think that nowadays with fast food, with all these, I don't know how in the UK, with Greggs, with all those, you know, like supermarkets, cafes and so on, we have always something in our hand. It's either a drink or it's a food. And when we are not hungry and we have to eat, what is it? Because when we are hungry and we eat, it makes sense. But when we are not hungry and we have to eat, why do we eat? So what is your take on that?
I was looking into some studies, to kind of read other people's experiences. They have done some documentaries where you couldn't be able to tell who's got an eating disorder or not, because we all look very normal people. Actually, I look smart. Into the eyes of some people, I look very smart. But I have a huge thing going on within, right? So when I... and one thing that struck me was there's no age. The onset can be very young, but it can be very adult. You can have an adult onset. There's no race, right? It happens everywhere in the world. You may have some parts of the world where maybe there's no tradition of eating disorder, or there's no kind of a physical manifestation of someone getting bigger. It happens because the pattern in here is the same, right? And it's paradoxically, it's the only thing that unites everyone. There's like, it doesn't make any difference at all. Like male, females, age, kind of a geographical area. So how many conditions go under identified, under the radar? Goodness, who knows? Like, who knows? But again, one thing is a coping strategy. It's a coping mechanism. And one thing is not having a coping mechanism, and that stays there forever. So having lows, in life, it's what life is. But it's looking at the way we come out of those lows that will tell us, you know, if we are okay or not. Let's take mourning, when someone dies, okay? Behaviorment. If there's in like if there's there are people who are in behaviorment and it's 2 years someone has died, that person's life is affected, it's disturbed by something, by a memory, by a something they are still incomplete about. Because life is life, people will die, and we know. So, and it's the same, my experience with this eating disorder has been the same. You know, I'm sure there are some moments I eat just because I'm overeating. But there are, you know, moments I know in all throughout these years are way beyond that. And I am an adult, I am relatively educated person. I couldn't spot the difference. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't. How, you know, how embedded now that was.
Mm. So, I think what would be really interesting, you know, to know also for our listeners, is do you have any particular strategies or anything which you do on a daily level? Or when you're in a situation, so when something, some thought or whatever comes up, something particular you do, some strategy you use?
So, yes, I do. And so first of all, I would recommend, if you think you are, you may have an eating disorder, try to log your food. Literally, I'm not kidding, log your food, what time you are having it, what is it, and where you are consuming it. And if you can, just write down what's happened just immediately before that or all around that. Do that for a few good days, because I have done it. I had to do it for the first time for this treatment. I had to do it for the first time so deeply. And I was shocked after 2 weeks of the things that came out of it. I was shocked how chaotic I am in my, I may eat well, so I may eat very healthy food, but there's no structure in my eating habits, right? So, and I could, you know, writing down what happened just before that and why I'm feeling this, just made me understand what I use as a pacifier. Okay, food I use as a pacifier, things that are disrupted because of my sleep. And when I lack my sleep, I will go into it will trigger other mechanisms. What happens when I'm social? Okay, so when I am out with people, I'm dining out. So if you can, log your food. Have a picture, an actual measurement of what's going on. And what I used to do before entering into treatment, because that's how overwhelming it was, I started doing something else. Recently, I started recognizing the binges, because I am I'm a binge eater. You know, I would go on a dinner with you guys, everything is fine, but I don't know, something would have, and it happened, this is real, for real, like going to dinner with friends. Something would have been triggered. I would have left them. Hey, bye, see you later. I would have gone into a McDonald's and have a full large meal.
It was me as well, Julia. Seriously.
Say again? That you? It was you?
Yeah, me as well. Yeah.
Wow. So it's okay. It's okay. Know that something has been triggered there. Right? And as long as you notice that, this is very important. Because for years, I haven't noticed it. I was just kind of devouring my food. There is a friend, he put it in a wonderful way. He said to me, Julia, when I was bigger, I realized I was thinking about food the whole day. But when it came to consume my food, I was not thinking about food at all. Bang, spot on. That is exactly how, specifically for me, binge eating episodes are. I'm not even thinking. I would be half meal and I would feel guilty, disgusted. Why am I doing this? What happened? This is too much. And another lunch of self-deprecating, you know, thoughts, right? And this is, again, and this is a characteristic of it, the lack of control, you and consuming that in secrecy. I would have never done that in front of someone else. And, you know, I've also, and this is so therefore a practice, and that's why I would suggest you log this, study your habits, because they are so on autopilot that you may not realize them. But once they are on paper, you will see them. Because, and one other thing that I realized, I used to prepare my binges. There are certain binges, you know they're coming. And if you see yourself that 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours earlier than that, you are preparing for your binge. I'm going to buy this pizza, this Coke, this cake, this. When you're preparing a list that is going to cost you £50 for a 20-minute binge on all those calories, you want to know that there's something I have to look into, right?
Well, that's fascinating, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they come. Some of them, you know they're coming. And I can waste 30 minutes in thinking what do I have to eat? But if I eat that, that's how racing this mind is sometimes. So what I do when that happens, and that's another piece that have worked very well for me, I suddenly realized I was doing that. Okay, let's do something else. There's the bed still to make up. Let's do the bed. Let's make the bed. Let's take 10 minutes and let's do it. 15 minutes later, the craving could have been still there, but probably 50% of the times the craving was gone. I distracted myself from that. I took myself away from it. Another thing that works for me is I will have my food. I will have so I've learned to eat mindfully. I'll set a timer 20 minutes. I have to have my meal in 20 minutes because I now know scientifically that my brain, it takes 20 minutes to the brain to know that the stomach is full. So if I eat slowly, you know, I want to have that bell ringing saying, okay, full, I'm full. I don't want to eat anymore. Because that stops also the binge. That will stop. The binge is you eat until you cannot have it anymore, until you're sick. So if I can get that bell ringing earlier, better, right? Well, better. I want to get it with the right amount of food. And So that works, setting up the 20 minutes. And also, what happens is after this meal, I may still want to, my mind would still be racing on, but I want a piece of cake, right? Actually, I want 2 or 3 pieces of cake. And I would say, hey, let's put a 15 minutes alarm. That this is me talking to myself, right? Let's put a 15 minutes alarm. If you still want it in 15 minutes, you'll have it. Don't worry. Okay. You're fine. And again, 50% of the time, I won't want that cake. And the other 50% of the time, I will have half slice. Because it's not, it was really wanting something nice or some sugars probably that I genuinely needed. Because that meal was not enough. So these are little things that have helped me. Now, I'm going through, because of my treatment, I'm going through what is called guided self-therapy. So there are tasks I have to do. And the therapist will follow me and we will go through. So there is 2 weeks of work and then I'll see the therapist. We'll go through that, get some learning and apply those learning in the following weeks. And there are stages to this program. I am at the second stage now that I have to plan my meals. So first stage was being like painstakingly detailed in my log. And by the way, I'm so eager to recover that I haven't missed a day. So do you know when things are so overwhelming? Oh, really? I have to write all this stuff? I did every single thing. Yes, for 2 weeks. Thank you. Without missing one day and without missing one line because I'm so fed up. That's it. Let's do it. And I trust 100%. It may seem irrelevant at that time. What am I doing all of this for? This is a huge burden. But I am trusting blindly 100%. This is building up towards where I want to be. So I'm not doubting for a second that this is not going to help me. This is going to help me. So, and now I am in the stage where I still have to record, but I have to plan my meals. Now is you have to eat regularly, because I eat like a 2 years old, right? Like everywhere in the day, you know, it can be 1 a.m. night at night. It can be I can leave 6 hours, 7 hours, 8 hours gap between two meals, and then I will rage on the second meal, right? So and binges just bring other binges as well. So when you are hungry, the binge also can be worsened. So now I am in that stage, which is stage two of a if I remember well, seven stages, and I'll be able to let you know later how, you know, the more detailed way. But these things, I've been starting doing them long time ago, because once the kidnapper is there, you have to go live. You're not seeing any light any soon. So I've learned, you know, how to deal with that.
It's very interesting what you say, Julia. And I think you can be very proud of yourself to deal with this with these situations. I can remember I did binge a few years ago, and I did it because I wanted to kill my feelings. So my question is. Maybe you do it because you don't want to feel in that moment, but the feelings they are not gone. They come back to you. How do you deal with these feelings when you? Wie sagt man das, wenn man sich so über die Zeit rettet?
Well, if you save yourself over time, basically a short-lived kind of victory, you know.
Oh right. How do I deal with them in the short term? You mean?
No, what was the question?
Wenn Sie mit diesen Gefühlen nicht umgehen, also, oh, ich kann es nicht erklären. Wenn sie ist, um die Gefühle nicht zu haben, wenn sie sich dann immer weiter über die Zeit rettet und nicht diese Attacke hat, aber die Gefühle sind ja trotzdem nicht weg, wie sie dann mit den Gefühlen umgeht, nachdem sie sich immer wieder über die Zeit gerettet hat, die Gefühle gehen ja nicht weg.
Yeah, well, the question was, you know, basically, you know, there are these feelings why probably, you know, one does this kind of binge stuff, yeah? So if you save yourself always, you know, you don't fall into the trap, so you have your strategy, yeah? But, I mean, you still have to deal with the emotions and with the feelings which are there and which actually triggered this. So how do you deal with them then? That was the question.
And putting the question a little bit different, because it's a great question. I think the eating disorder is just a symptom. And how can you go down to the source of the problem? Is this a question probably, right?
Very good one. Because, you know, again, you know, over the years, I had people, Julia, cannot just do a little bit of diet and just go to the gym. But again, it's up here, right? It's absolutely up here. It's a loop. It's a mental loop. And what I have, so... While now, so the approach I'm having now is behavior first and then cognition. So what we're going to do, I am educating my body to some order and cleanliness. And then we're gonna clean something else. So then we're going to deal with the cognition side of things. In the meanwhile, though, I still have those triggers. And what I have learned to do is to be compassionate. What, you know, by studying all these records I have understood how harsh I'm talking to myself. When I am thinking of, I can't have this wonderful guy to see me naked because, you know, fundamentally I don't want to be rejected and I don't want to look bad, right? So I am now in a position to know that. I'm now in a position to go so deep in my thoughts that I can tell myself, I be compassionate. would I talk that way? Would I say those things to Leonard? Never. Because I know how special he is, right? And if he has that self-talk, I will talk him out of it. Hey, you're missing something here. Let me show you. And that's what I'm doing now to myself, right? Do you know, knowing these deep feelings of feeling ugly or feeling that I've taken all the clothes that don't fit me, that I was keeping in my wardrobe because when I will lose weight, I will wear them. I have ditched all of them in the bin and I've bought new clothes of my size because you are good the way you are right now. Okay. So compassion, be kind to us. Wearing those clothes that were making me suffer was doing any good to me, right? So I was being the person hard to myself. And now I'm just, okay, let's go shopping. Let's buy something nice. You can breathe, actually. And it will actually highlight your shapes or, you know, make you better because we all have different shapes. That's fine. I am now, you know, there would be, I don't know, I have a conversation with someone. I'll get out of there and I want to binge because something has been triggered. And I'll be, hey, everything is fine. I understand you are, you know, I absolutely understand you are frustrated by what that person said. But you know what? They may see things in a certain way. It doesn't make it true. So don't take it personal. It's just a way of seeing things. It doesn't mean you are like that. I'm having all these little kind conversations for me to be accepting of what goes on there. It doesn't mean I identify myself with those things. It doesn't mean that I agree, but I'm just accepting the things the way they are. What I was attached to is things should be in a certain way. Things should go in a certain way. And when they don't, or when I feel they don't, or when I think they will think certain things of me, that's where, you know, I go. My mind just, you know, loses the plot. So, compassion. So this is a very long-winded answer to say compassion, to say, talk to myself the way, the nice and caring girl I am with others. I can be, I started being with myself. I was not doing that at all. Zero.
But I mean, this is actually very beautiful because, I mean, you gave now, I think, two very, very powerful, you know, ways of dealing with this. The first one is a very practical one. It's like making something visible in order to understand it, in order to be able to also, you know, be in control of it, to know what's happening. And the other one is actually self-love, to be compassionate about yourself, to accept the status quo, which is at the moment, and not to judge yourself. So you have a double negative, so to say, you know, a thing happening. But you say, okay, that's how it is at the moment. I'm working on it, so I have the discipline. You know, I'm doing things on a practical outer level. And I, you know, I'm compassionate with myself. I think that's a... Well, a book must be written about this immediately. It's very important.
And, you know, as you spoke, Christian, I thought of another thing. By the way, I'm not, you know, the voice that is consoling me and is being compassionate with me is also pulling me towards responsibility. You know, that voice is not just saying, you know, fluffy stuff. Don't worry, you'll be fine. I do tell myself those things because it's real. Everything will be fine. There's nothing permanent. But that voice is also now saying, Julia, can you now take responsibility for what happened? Now, can you just stop blaming others? So there have been episodes where I was frustrated at other people's behavior, but then I realized I didn't set the rules. I didn't make it transparent with others. I didn't manage the expectations. So, for example, people using my time thinking they could use it for free. Without, you know, I'm talking about business environment now, right? People thinking that they could use my time for free and use my skills for free. Well, Julia, next time, do you know what you do? You set an expectation, you know, that's what I want to be paid. Is that okay for you? And you give yourself and others choices, right? So now you take responsibility for what happened. Stop blaming, move on. So that voice is not just consoling me and giving me a hug. That voice is now, okay, that didn't work. What do you want to do next? And I'll reply to that voice, what I'm going to do next. Great, excellent. That's perfect. So again, putting out there, giving it verbal. I'm not doing it in my head. I am saying it loud. You will see me going around the house. Some people may look at me like that, but hey, it's working. It's massively working because I'm having a conversation with an adult person that is self-developed and is also, again, pulling me towards integrity with myself and responsibility towards myself. It's no one else's responsibility. It's only mine. And then other people can choose as well.
Thank you very much, Julia. I think for the moment, we are absolutely overwhelmed by the wisdom you are sharing, not just on eating disorders, but in general about life. I mean, the things we've just learned are applicable to many, many other situations. And I have another request for you. Is it okay if we make another episode once you are through your schedule, after you have gone through the 7 steps?
I would be delighted. Absolutely, yes. Thanks.
It would be really interesting to see how it went, what struggles you had, what you overcame maybe, and it would be really nice to have you back on the podcast.
Yes, and I look forward. Thank you so much for inviting me, because I cannot describe how this is formative for me too. This is another way of putting life and experiences into words. I learn why I speak, right? So thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. I definitely will be on the other one when it's time.
Thank you very much, Julia.
Thank you, guys. I wish you a wonderful night.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah.
And Leonard, you make our little outro.
It's a little one because I don't want to disturb even the last sentence. I learn while speaking. I mean, we could write now a book about the last sentence. It's amazing. But to all the listeners, if you want to follow Julia, I think it's okay if maybe you are on Facebook or Instagram. I don't know, Julia. Are you on?
Yes, Instagram, julia.principe, so we can
do it in the show. Put it in the show notes, yeah.
Both on Instagram and Facebook. I'm mostly active on that.
Perfect, perfect. And I think you would be a really real inspiration to people who are basically as well struggling with similar topics. And I think you could help a lot, many people on that topic. But this is not what I wanted to say in the outro. Well, as well, but not as detailed. To all the listeners, if you have enjoyed this show now, please forward the show to people who you think are basically getting value out of it. If you think that it was valuable, subscribe our show on iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating that we get visibility on iTunes, that people basically can see our show and get value out of it. In that sense, have a wonderful evening, morning, midday, night, whatever it is. And see you next, or hear you better next Sunday. Bye-bye.